I'm going to speed through my prepared slides a little bit to make the time. I'm wanting to home in on a key part of my talk, which is confrontation. And what I'm wanting to say is, and this is picking up the tendency in Mark's opening presentation, home in on confrontation as itself a huge problem. Confrontation, seeing this is a battle on or about climate change, anyone who lapses into that has, I'm wanting to argue, lost one of the most important things about this. If you see this as a battle, if you see this as a war, then you've lost. Just as in the war on terror, the war on drugs, all of these wars create the polarisation, which is one of the worst consequences of the debate itself. So just picking up David's last presentation, a biased media source is obviously misleading people. However, I'm suggesting that even worse than misleading people is creating the polarisation itself, creating a mindset in which probably people who disagree with the Australian are encouraged to think in this polemical binary way. So in response to that, I'm wanting to emphasise ways of achieving something which is not objectivity, not balance, but is opting out of the binary confrontational mindset. So my focus is on, I'll just quickly jump over the idea of linear communication, this dominant model around, which has been seen as in the past but is very much in the present, which for public communication sees in terms, in binary terms of experts who know, transmitting that knowledge, it's often called the bullet theory of communication, to hit the targets. I won't say any more about that in another presentation. I've argued against this whole model. The important thing is, I think, for this kind of gathering is not simply to see that simplistic model as misleading, not a good guide to effective action, but find creative ways of getting around it in a situation where the the rule against confrontation has got to include not confronting linear with non-linear or whatever forms of communication. So it's about a kind of strategic arrangement of these different modalities rather than choosing one or the other, even choosing the option of not choosing. I'll quickly jump to museums themselves. This is from the Australian Museum web page, a statement on climate change. I just want to make a few quick points about this. First of all, what is quoted here will convey very different, almost contradictory views of who the museum is that is speaking. It starts by claiming to be a leading scientific institution around the bottom. How can we minimise effects on climate change? The three R's. The first statement is speaking as a scientific institution in an abstract sense. The second one is speaking as a didactic teacher to people who are different kinds of people. Now, my point about that is that from a viewpoint of effective communication, that could be seen as not effective because the target, it's a different target in the different paragraphs, the message changes, so not good communication. What I'm wanting to say is that, that's actually a legitimate response to the multiplicity of people who have been communicated with by that one web page. So effective communication, which is hitting just one person, will be missing many other people who may or may not read that text. So it comes across maybe as a kind of confusion, but better confusion, better multiplicity of purposes, better multiplicity of strategies and targets than keeping a pure linear line. I'm going to briefly introduce something which is probably a bit complex for me to try, but I'll try it. What I'm recommending as a solution is a trialogue model. A trialogue model in terms of communication is going beyond the monologue, which is a traditional way of museums and other linear communicators use. Dialogue, a dialogue is better. A trialogue is a way of modelling dialogues so that they become more complex. However, the important thing to note about trialogues, in the light of, say, Mike Hume's presentation, the trialogue, he had a tetralogue of four people, or I think hexalogues, six people, multiplying non-dialogic forms. The trouble with that way of thinking is that I'm wanting to suggest that trialogues already push the limits of our capacity to really think deeply about multiplicity and complexity. And so, obviously, four is more adequate than three, six is more adequate than four, and the sky's the limit. The trouble is that the task in managing complexity is not simply to recognise complexity, but to manage it. And in order to do that, you have to have strategies which are conscious, recognised to be limited, for limiting and managing complexity. And that's what I get from the three-body analysis of Henri Poincaré, which is seen as a... it was good science in the time, end of 19th century, precursor to Einstein. It's been seen as a foundation stone for chaos theory. I'm just wanting to use it as a metaphor for the moment because it carries some useful points to bring into play. The first one is that it's a modification of a two-body system, which, far from being a product of simplistic thinking, was an absolute triumph of science. Kepler's discovery of the elliptical orbits of planets, Newton's mathematical solution of that, those are not simple achievements. And in many cases, to manage a sense of an elliptical orbit is going to be very powerful. So I'm not saying that, and that's a dialogue in these terms. So dialogues can be tremendously important. The point of jumping to the next level of complexity of a trialogue, in Poincaré's case, the problem was the moon. So you could map the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. If you add the Moon, it just complicates things. So the point of a three-body analysis is to look for a single element that is the first complication in the dialogue. And so it's just a very simple way of looking at every exchange. And with every exchange, when you look at it, you can always find a third element. You can find a fourth, fifth, and so on. The point of the three-body analysis, the trilogues I'm suggesting, is that they are a step forward towards understanding the real complexity, the unmanageable complexity of the many-body, infinite-body problem, which is the totality of what we have to understand and work with. So I'll just jump over that. We use the trialogue principle in the project. And the way we used it in a number of ways, but I'm just going to home in on one particular kind of data we collected, which proved to be extremely interesting. What we did was we had a 3-hour visit to each of our 5 partner museums. Each visit was a 3-hour journey through that museum, each of them constructed as a trialogue between a scientist, a very good scientist, David was one of them, Jan Conroy was the other, alternating, a high-level, articulate museum person, and myself as the anchor. So the point was that to see what these three specially chosen people did in the dialogue. And what's important, one important thing about the structure of the experiment is that these people were not asked to represent science museums or whatever. They were meant to be achieving a kind of resolution of those discourses within themselves. So, in a way, they were a fractal of a larger three-body issue. So that captures the attempt in the project to go beyond the confrontation between three pre-existing people, to average them out or whatever, but to see what can happen in dynamic practice when people prepared in this way confront key objects in the museum itself. So this was pushing them to think on their feet, to become creative, multi-body or respondents to whatever was in front of them. So
and how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you explore with museums the level of engagement with the community that allows, in some sense, the greater level of engagement, but without undermining that sense of independence and trust that has been built up over, well, probably the last 100 years?
Yes.
And how do you do that? To better allow the community to engage with the resources and skills and materials that are available in the museums, but not to lose the trust and the independence. That's a very difficult question, but it's critically important.
Yeah, yeah. Whether it be energy, whether it be infectious disease, whether it be city planning or sustainable food crops, these are all things that they're increasingly going to be issues we're going to be discussing. They are going to be issues that push political buttons, that may push moral buttons, that may push religious buttons. And we certainly should be a source of conversation about those and people gathering and information sharing. And we have to figure out where those things are.
I guess my view at the moment is that much of that sort of how would I say, engagement in the past has been for the community to come to the museum and take away information,
yes.
Not as much to do it, not so much interactively, but for the community to see the museum as a venue for this sort of, you know, community discussion forum that we've just been talking
about. Well, what I would even way I would reword it is that we have traditionally been pushing information to the other laws. As receding from everything of these subjects to just the simple ideas like people writing their own reviews of books on websites and you deciding to buy a book. People are generating their own content. They are as much empowered to generate the information. It's much more of a dialogue, and sometimes it's a dialogue between them, and we're just the facility to allow that dialogue to occur.
Right. Just quickly discussing this. First of all, this is a translation of some parts of that exchange into words, and part of the point of that is to contrast the thinness of this with the thickness, the richness of the visual display. I'll be referring to it. But the important thing to pick up is this: how this becomes data for a dynamic reading of statements. See, these statements can be summed up. You can get an overall schedule. That exchange happened in time and space, and people changed in the course of it. And I'll be discussing that. Second thing, just focusing on David's contribution. David is there as the scientist, but what he is pointing out to Wayne is things about museums. So, that is what is so important about a trialogue. That each person in the course of it becomes, to some degree, an expert in the other field. Three-body analysis is about how, over time, each of the three bodies is modified by the interactions with the others. And David is unconsciously, not specifically consciously at the time, showing that. That's right. Wayne's response is interesting. In these two responses, Wayne's response to a potential criticism is actually to take that point of view and go further with it. So instead of blocking the flow, he takes it one stage further. That is a beautiful thing to happen in a trilogic exchange. Instead of and what he does is he tries to deflect it to his own purposes, of course. But if you are understanding people trying to work out together a common solution, that response is tremendously valuable and important, and that's what Wayne is doing, and he's constructing an alternative vision of how museums ought to be. What's then interesting is that David says, my view at the moment is that much of our engagement in the past has been for the community to come to the museum and take away information. What David's doing there is very politely, because he is a very polite man, saying, I don't really believe you. that too is absolutely essential in a discursive process which is going to come up with something new and collaborative. If everyone agrees with everyone else in the trialogue, there is no exchange. In the three-body system of planets going around the sun, if there was nothing to oppose gravity, everything would collapse. So there's got to be the ongoing momentum of people maintaining difference. And then the last one, Wayne responds to that criticism again with what I've suggested is, I don't know Wayne well enough to know whether this is a typical characteristic, David suggests the museum in the past has been like this. Wayne goes over the top with his, pushing information to the unwashed. And so he produces a response from David of saying, well, partly unwashed. Even though that was what David was implying, when confronted with Wayne's over-the-top version of what you're saying, it's he who pulls back. And I won't say any more about it, except that except to say that the dynamics of interchanges with people, all of whom understand much of the total complexities of a situation, will be unpredictable and productive. And so the trialogues, collection of moments like this, it's a priceless set of resources for analysis and understanding of what the different positions, or where the different positions can change, where they can be surprisingly aligned, where they might never be aligned. It's a wonderful discovery technique. So I'll just conclude by summarising the things that I was wanting to say. First of all, three paradoxical conclusions. First of all, climate change is a scene of struggles and disputes and disagreements, and yet, and so that can never be disregarded. You can never suppose that the Australian will not continue its policies and so on. But to frame that as a war, it's been said about war that in war, truth is the first casualty. Once you've got down to the point of seeing it as war, then you have lost everything which makes museums and science important. Climate change is unmanageably complex, but that's something which must be both acknowledged and yet managed. So there's no easy middle ground between that. It's a contradiction. It's a paradox. And finally, engagement is both essential and also impossible. It's impossible, but also essential, and that's what we've got to find a way of doing. Thank you.